We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Touchdown! Touchdown, Colorado!
From Learfield, this is the CU Buffs Insider. Here's the voice of the Buffaloes, Mark Johnson.
Time for another Buffs Insider Weekly Podcast with Neil Welk of CUBuffs.com. I'm voice of the Buffs, Mark Johnson. Let's see, what shall we talk about? There's just a couple of interesting things going on with Colorado football right now. It has been a roller coaster ride, Neil, certainly. Buffs coming off a blanking last week. First time they've been shut out since 2009 when they got blanked 48-0 by Stanford. Tough one last week in the rain, the cold. They've got a big game this week now with Cal coming to town. A lot going on around that homecoming game. We'll talk about that as time goes on, but certainly... there's never anything boring going on right now with Colorado football, is there?
No, and Mark, I think we need to dispel the rumor really quickly that I saw you out there taking snaps Wednesday at practice, but that was only in a backup role. I don't think you're going to be the starting quarterback this week.
I don't need that kind of negativity in my life. I think I've still got some throws left in that right arm, but okay, if you're going to rain on my parade, fine. Tough one, though, last week. Speaking of rain, not what we expected up in Pullman, Washington, and weather certainly had something to do with that, but overall, boy, the Buffs did not and could not, and there was a reason they had a quarterback change at halftime, could not find anything going offensively.
No, you know, and that's just been the story of this year. The defense played well enough to keep them in the game. You know, 14 points at halftime, 21 in the third quarter. If the offense has any semblance of consistency, and I mean any semblance of consistency, you know, they're in that game. The defense gave them a turnover at midfield, you know, in the first quarter. They stopped them again, got a punt back at midfield in the first quarter, got nothing out of that. And so this is just what we've seen all year. The defense plays well, offense doesn't. Offense plays well, defense doesn't. And so, you know, we're still 8 games in looking for that first complete game when both teams play well or when both sides of the ball play well. Again, that was just the story last weekend. And Steven Montez benched at halftime at quarterback. Sam Neuer came in. marginally better. I wouldn't say a ton better. But so, we've got a quarterback competition this week.
Which is always interesting. And in the world of sports, there is no position that is ever altered where more conversation is not generated as a result of that. So anytime there's a quarterback issue, there's going to be a lot of media attention to it, obviously. You and I don't have any inside information in terms of who's going to start on Saturday. The coaching staff's been very close to the vest. I think myself, I would be shocked if they didn't go with the incumbent. It's just like politics. Mm-hmm. It's always the favorite is always the incumbent. And I think I feel this week, even though, with that being said, maybe the reins are a little bit tighter on Steven, and they might yank him if things don't go well early against Cal, do you think?
Yeah, no, I think that's whoever is the starter. You know, Mike talked about that a couple times this week, said, hey, you know, whoever I put out there, if they don't play well, I'm not going to hesitate to get him out of there and get the other guy in. But I kind of agree with you, and I've been to every practice this week, watched him play, watched him practice, and it's the snaps have been split right down the middle, the repetitions right down with – you know, both guys playing with a number two offense, both guys playing with a number one offense on goal line, team drills, all those things. But I'm like you. I think they are probably leaning toward the incumbent, but that's just a gut feeling. It's nothing that any of the coaches have said.
You know, this isn't, Gary Barnett has talked about on a radio broadcast about going back to the 2004 season where we had a similar situation with Joel Klatt. I know you talked to Joel, the former quarterback for the Buffaloes, now with Fox Sports, and are writing a piece based on that, kind of with that idea that can this be good for Steven Montez? Joel Klatt will never say it was good for him, but kind of go back and recount some of that conversation.
Well, you know, I called Joel earlier this week and just said, hey, do you remember that? He goes, how could I forget? He said, I'm a competitive guy, and he said, I was ticked off. He might have said something other than ticked, but for our audience, we'll say he was ticked off. And he talked about that, and he said that it was, incredibly difficult time for him. The offense hadn't been playing well. Iowa State was coming to town, and Gary benched him. Gary Barnett said, put James Cox in as the starter. James did not perform very well. They brought Joel back in the second half. The Buffs won 19-10, I believe. But what it did, what Joel said it did is, he said, when I got done with that game, I made up my mind that I was never going to be on the bench again. And he did. He wasn't. He finished his career as the starter all the way through. The following week, he went down to Texas A&M, threw for 340-something yards, 3 touchdowns against the number 17 Aggies in College Station. Colorado lost in overtime in that game, but they ended up winning 3 of their last 4. Came back, won the won the Big 12 North, and went to the Big 12 championship game and ended up going to a bowl game and beating UTEP in the bowl game. So, Joel said, he said, I will never say that it was the right decision by Gary Barnett, but he said it did make me a better player and it made the team better.
Well, I think the opportunity there is there for Steven Montez. By taking a guy out, giving him a fresh set of eyes, if we will, get a chance to catch his breath a little bit, it's not necessarily an indictment that this guy can't be a big-time quarterback. But what it is, sometimes when you get in the middle of the fire, you kind of lose your bearings a little bit, and allows a guy to maybe have a new, like I said, a fresh set of eyes, understand, okay, I kind of lost my way out there a little bit. So this is a great opportunity, regardless of what they do. But even the threat of bringing him out and opening up the competition, I think allows him to kind of refocus a little bit, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. I think it forces him to step back and take a breath and say, okay, what have I been doing wrong? Maybe get back to his basics and maybe just look at the game a little differently. And that's what Joel said it did for him. He said, I went back to my basics. He said, I was trying too hard. I was trying to force everything that I was doing. And he said, and Joel had something very interesting. He said, playing quarterback's like driving a car. If you have to think about how hard you're going to press the brake, or you have to think that you need to turn on your turn signal, if you have to think that I need to hit the clutch or I need to, how hard am I going to press the accelerator, he said, it's never going to happen. You're going to be a terrible driver. Mm-hmm. He said, it has to be natural. And that's what he said his advice would be to Steven and to Sam Neuer, make it natural. Just go out.
And we quarterbacks think alike, and so as I'm sitting here listening to that, I'm thinking, I drive very well, and yet you still think I can't be a quarterback.
Well, I said you could be a great backup. I think, watching you out there, I think those snaps that you were taking from that shotgun, you look good as a backup. Number 3 option, no doubt.
Well, thank you. I only dropped 2 or 3 snaps when they snapped it to me, too. Big game on Saturday, obviously, tomorrow, for homecoming, Cal coming to town. Here's where the Buffs find themselves right now. They're 4-4. 1-4 in Pac-12 play, certainly not where they expected to be. But as you get this deep in a season with four games remaining, now you start thinking about, okay, how do we navigate and get back to a bowl game at this point? And I think it's got to start on Saturday, obviously.
Ooh, yeah. 4-4 and 4 to go. You know, if you're going to play 500 ball, you better win a couple from here on out, and that will make them bowl eligible. And certainly, this a home game, homecoming, noon, big crowd, nice day. That's a recipe. You can't ask for much better as far as, you know, a setting goes. And this is a game they need to win. And interestingly enough, Cal's in exactly the same situation. 4-4, 1-4 in the Pac-12. It's been a frustrating year for them. They've lost a couple of close games. So whoever emerges out of this one, I think, is going to be have a very positive attitude going forward.
Yeah, I would certainly think so. You know, when we look at these offensive issues, and much like I talked about, the attention is always on the quarterback, and that's true many times when an offense struggles, you automatically look to that guy. But, you know, I think it's only fair and objective to say all the offensive issues the Buffs have had are not simply because of the guy under center.
Yeah. Mike McIntyre said it the other day. He said, you know, when you look at the offensive struggles, you look at just about every position on the field on offense, except for running back. Mike said, you know what, can't ask for any more from my running back, and I would agree on that. I don't think you can ask Philip Lindsay to do any more than he's already done. But everywhere else, if you look at the offensive line, if you look at the wide receivers, there's just been some breakdowns, there have been some mistakes, there's been some miscues, all kinds of little things that have added up to not a very good year, not a very consistent year. So those are all the things that have to get fixed. It's not just the quarterback.
Yeah. Do you think moving forward, we talked a little bit last week about kind of a little changing philosophy because of what you just mentioned. Phil has been such a workhorse back there. I'd imagine you continue to ride number 23, don't you?
Saddle it up. I mean, that kid is so tough. I watched, you know, as he was running last week and, you know, just horrific conditions, and he had linemen slipping and the holes weren't there. Washington State put 8 guys in the box and said, "We dare you to throw," which turned out to be a pretty good plan of attack on Washington. And Phillip knew that, and he was running it headlong into, you know, 2 or 3 defenders on every play. And, yeah, I think this is another game where, you know, you want to get Phillip going early, but you also, whoever is playing quarterback, get them into a rhythm early. Get them some nice quick throws out to the side. Get them some quick slants. Something to get them into that rhythm and give them some confidence, whoever it is, even if it's you, Mark.
I like that 5-7-step drop. Get back early. Give me some time to kind of survey things downfield. Well, and what we're talking about, in all seriousness, whether it is Steven Montez or Sam Noyer, and you said it, I think, initially when you said marginally better. That was the first time Sam ever had any real meaningful snaps, and I thought represented himself relatively well under the circumstances. But, yeah, the play calling's got to help those guys a little bit here, too, I think, early on.
Yeah, no, this is something where they've got to call some of those things early and get those guys some confidence. You know, they don't have to throw deep. They don't have to complete a 60-yard bomb, but get them some nice, easy throws off to the side, those little bubble screens, something that gives them some confidence, that gets them into a rhythm, gets that offense moving. Because if that quarterback starts out, you know, 0-5, 0-6, 0-7 again, you know, you're looking at a long day.
Yeah. Let me throw this one at you. Who's the best team in the Pac-12 right now?
Ooh.
I don't know. At one time, I would have said, hands down, it is Washington. USC, I think, has had some time there. But Washington State, maybe, but then they get beat by Cal. I mean, got beat badly by Cal. I have no idea who the best team in the league is right now.
No, I still think Washington's the best team. I think they have historically had troubles at Arizona State. I think they'd lost more times than they'd won down there over the last 10 or 12 years. I still like Washington overall. I think they're very well coached. I think they've got very good players. And I think when it all comes down to it, I think they'll win the North. Yeah. And I think they'll win the Pac-12. I just like that team from top to bottom better than anybody. Everybody else has a lot of holes, and I just don't think they have that many.
Here's the sad thing, though, from a conference standpoint. At this point, I don't see a Pac-12 representative in the Final Four.
No, I don't either. And part of that is you're going to see a one-loss team in the Final Four, no doubt about it, whether it's Clemson, you know, whoever it is from the Big Ten, somebody's going to have a loss, likely. But what you're going to see from the Pac-12 is they don't have any big non-conference wins.
Right.
Washington did not play. I think Rutgers was their biggest non-conference win. So their resume is not going to look good when that committee starts looking at one-loss teams, if, in fact, Washington is a one-loss team. But I think, you know, Right now, the way it looks, the Pac-12 is on the outside looking in for the first time.
This weekend, I mentioned, there's a lot going on around the football game. By the way, it's a 12 o'clock noon kickoff. Our coverage on the Colorado Football Network is underway at 10 o'clock. Gary Barnett, Andy Lindahl, and yours truly. By the way, we're going to have to do a fun little in-game live thing with Dick and Bobby Anderson. We've got that lined up because the 1967 Bluebonnet Bowl team is going to be back this week. You also got the celebration of Ralphie in the 50th. And then we've talked a lot about Rashawn, but I think it's worth circling back around. They're going to retire the number 19 for the deceased now Heisman Trophy winner Rashawn Salaam this weekend, and a lot of conversation surrounding that.
Yeah, it's really cool. I mean, Colorado's only retired three numbers in its history: Byron White, Joe Romig, and Bobby Anderson. And I think it's neat that they're going to get Rashawn's number up there and retire that. Bobby's going to be here, obviously, as part of the Bluebonnet celebration. Joe Romig, professor here at the university for a long time, is going to be here, and they're going to be members of Byron White's family will also be here as part of the celebration. And then, obviously, Rashawn's family will be here. So I think it's neat. Rashawn was a great representative of the university, only Heisman Trophy winner, and I think it's a very good time to do that.
Would you go back to that season, 1994? What moment would stand out? Would it be the long run against Iowa State, final game going over 2,000? Or what stands out when you think of Rashawn Salaam, running back for Colorado, in that magical season?
You know, the play that a lot of people remember is the long touchdown run that actually put him over 2,000 yards against Iowa State in his last game at Folsom Field. Probably a moment that sticks out for me is going to Texas in just brutal, you know, early October heat in Texas. Texas has the lead at the halftime, and Rashawn ends up running for about 320 yards, three or four touchdowns, and he literally just body blowed Texas. I mean, he just kept on hammering them. And Texas wilted in the heat, which is not what you think is supposed to happen on your home field. And he beat them down, and Colorado comes back and wins that game, goes on to a very, you know, to a great season. And that's probably what I remember from Rashawn, you know, specifically in that season is just the relentless power he had that day in just, you know, brutal conditions, and you'd think the running back would wear down, and instead it was those big Texas linemen.
You know, these questions are always unfair to ask, but as long as you've covered, is he the most impressive back you've seen? And there have been great ones, make no mistake about it. Would you say he's the most impressive back you've seen here in the long time you've covered the Buffaloes?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I mean, and there have been some great backs. There's a really good back running for this team right now, you know, in Philip Lindsay. Eric Bieniemy was a great back. Speedy Stewart was a great back. Chris Brown, who, you know, ran for six touchdowns against Nebraska in that 62-36 win, was a great back. But Rashawn could run for power inside, and he had enough speed that when he got on the outside, he could outrun people. And so he had great moves in the hole. He just did everything really, really well. There were no holes in Rashawn's game. There was no way to stop him. You couldn't say, okay, if we force him to go inside, we're going to shut him down. He just did everything well, and he was a better receiver than most people thought. And so I think as far as just the overall total package, yeah, Rashawn is as good as it gets at Colorado.
Well, it'll certainly be fun on Saturday at Folsom Field when they retire the number 19 of Colorado's only Heisman Trophy winner, Rashawn Salaam. You know, you're just going down the list, and you think of Bobby Purifine. There are other guys you can put in there that were great, great running backs for the Colorado Buffaloes. And we didn't even go back any further than the 80s from the list we just laid out there. But think about this for a second. And last week it happened. Philip Lindsay crosses the 1,000-yard barrier in the season for the Buffs in that ball game. He had 98 yards on, 29 carries, I think it were. Actually had 98 yards on 24 carries and was stoned his last five carries, got nothing, and then finally Mike McIntyre pulled him out of the ball game. He becomes the first Colorado running back to have back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons. That's stunning to me when you think of, especially going back, you know, in the system that Mac was running and the success they had running the football. And Colorado never had back-to-back 1,000-yard rushers, the same guy, in its history?
Yeah, and they've had one guy get 1,000 yards before in two seasons. Eric Bieniemy did it in 1988 and then again in 1990, but he missed 1989 because he was injured for a couple games. Of course, that was an era when, you know, if they didn't have Eric Bieniemy, they had a guy named J.J. Flanagan, who was also pretty doggone good. And then the year later, they had a guy named Mike Pritchard, who was a wide receiver, but, oh, we're going to put you in at tailback, and you can run for 220 yards and whatever it was against Tennessee. So that was just – they had, you know, stable of great backs back then. But, yeah, if you look at the history of Colorado, and more often than not, they've been a running football team a lot of those years, it's interesting to me that they haven't had back-to-back 1,000-yard guys.
Yeah. Phillip Lindsay, first ever to do it, and he's going to keep adding to it. He's got a shot at catching EB, but he's going to have some pretty heavy productivity here. You know, there is a chance, and the way they're leaning on him, you know, I give him a puncher's chance to maybe catch EB.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, this is a guy that had 280 against Arizona, and then followed up with what, you know, a buck 80 or something, or whatever it was against Oregon State a week later. So yeah, he's got a puncher's chance, no doubt.
Let's just segue into some basketball news. Colorado, in fact, tomorrow, as this comes out on Friday, Saturday morning before the football game, is going to have an open scrimmage from 9:30 to 11 o'clock at the Coors Event Center. Monday night, they've got an exhibition game against the School of Mines at 7 o'clock at the Coors Event Center. And then they've got a closed scrimmage they're going to have later on with another college team that nobody's going to be able to watch. But we're going to get an early sign of what Tad Boyle's team is going to look like. A lot of young talent. We found out, though, on Thursday that Evan Batty will not be competing this season because he's going to be forced to redshirt. And long story short, in high school athletics in the state of California, you got 4 years to play 4 years. He repeated because of some family issues and things. His mom had to repeat his freshman year. He had to sit out then his senior year of high school basketball in California. That's been well documented. But the NCAA has determined because of that, he has to set out his freshman year. Tad Boyle, obviously not very happy about it. You kind of feel bad for the young guy.
I feel bad for the young guy because he's done everything right.
Right.
He's done everything that he is supposed to do. He got very good grades his senior year in high school, which he had to miss. He couldn't play basketball his senior year in high school. He accepted that, said, fine, I'll go ahead. And he stayed at his high school. He could have gone somewhere else and played at a private school, but he didn't. He stayed at his high school. He practiced with his team every day. He got good grades, did everything he was supposed to do. He's a wonderful kid, just a joy to be around. He comes here, and the NCAA, which – and I got to be careful here because I work for the University of Colorado, which is part of the NCAA, but the NCAA is the organization that did not punish North Carolina for admittedly doing some rather interesting things with their academics over the years. And instead, they punished a kid from Colorado who has done everything right. I feel really terrible for the kid, but you know what? He's got a great attitude. He is going to be a very good basketball player. He's going to come out of this. I truly believe that. But, yeah, I feel bad for him.
Well, you kind of have the feel a little bit. There's a little double jeopardy going on here. He's forced to miss his senior year. And for those that don't quite understand, well, why does A have anything to do with B? In recent years here, they've had to put a rule in, 4 or 5 years now, that kids have gone through, maybe haven't been taking care of business. They realize they're not going to qualify to play at a Colorado or a USC or an Arizona or pick your program out there. And so they repeat a year to clean their academics up. So they've tried to dissuade that. And I understand that. The intention is good. But like so many times, we see whether it's the NCAA or it's governmental work, we do things and they're unforeseen consequences that end up hurting a kid, and this is one of those set of circumstances. But you get a lot of excitement about this. Well, with Evan on the bench, and he'll be great. He'll get bigger and stronger and everything. But you're excited about what Tad Boyle's team's going to offer this season.
Oh, I can't wait to watch this team play. It's going to be great. It's going to be very interesting to watch just because of all the young bodies they've got out there. You know, they're still going to have, four freshman scholarship kids, a couple more guys that have never played for the Buffs, Naaman Wright, who is a transfer, Dallas Walton, Alex Strading's coming in. So they've got a lot of kids that haven't played. They've got some good returning guys. And so I think it's going to be a lot of fun to see. I want to see what kind of rotation Tad comes out of this because it's you know, when I go and watch at practice, you know, day to day, you can't tell who you'd be putting out there. And so I think Tad's going to have a really interesting choice with his rotation.
So once again, that's Saturday morning before the football game, 9:30 to 11 o'clock. They'll open up the Coors Event Center for fans to come in and check out the basketball team. And then Monday night is that exhibition game. That one will be at 7 o'clock with the School of Mines. Real quick before we wrap up, that Mark Wetmore is going to do what Mark Wetmore does. That's go to the Pac-12 championships. And, you know, you talk to Mark sometimes, and sometimes it's, you get the sense the sky's falling. But we're smarter than that. The Buffs, both men and women, they've got this great streak going in Pac-12 championships. And this weekend in Springfield, Oregon, right near Eugene, we got the Pac-12 championships happening.
Yep. Nobody's ever won the Pac-12 men's cross-country championship except Colorado. They've had six Pac-12 cross-country championships, and CU men have won all six. The women have won three out of six. So out of 12 total, Colorado's won nine championships. They're not favored. A couple times they haven't been favored. Oregon is probably going to be the favorite, both. It's on their home course. But I would never count the Buffs out. And so I think it'll be a lot of fun to watch that. And, you know, good luck to them both.
You've been talking, I think, more on a regular basis with Mark Wetmore over the years, much more than I have. In my new position now as the director of broadcasting, I got to get a chance to do it all the time. He fascinates me. You think about cross country, and for those who are uninitiated or uneducated about it, well, you send the kids out there and they run. You talk to Mark, you realize there's a whole lot going on, a lot of strategy involved in that thing.
Oh, Mark, this is, you want to talk about inside baseball and statistics and everything down to heart rate and what they're eating and how often they run and how fast they run and the taper and when does he start pulling the kids back and how much rest do they get before this meet and then looking ahead. And you know, the thing is the goal every year is the NCAA championships. In the last 17 years, Mark Wetmore's teams have finished in the top 10 in the nation 15 times. They've won seven NCAA championships, if you combine the men and the women, in the last 15 years. So he knows what he's doing. But that's their goal this year. They're aiming for the NCAAs. But they have to try and win the Pac-12s. Then they have to try and win the regionals. And he has everything down to the heart rate of what their heart rate is before the race, to how much they eat and what their body temperature was. He has this down to a science. And all you got to do is look at he's coached Olympic medalists. Yeah. He's pretty good.
Well, there's a lot more to it than just running. Although with Neil and me, he just writes, I just talk. That's all we do. As we put a wrap on the Buffs Insider this week, don't forget our coverage for Colorado and Cal, the homecoming football game on Saturday at Folsom Field, 10 a.m. The pregame show will kick it off on the Colorado Football Network at 12 o'clock. And don't forget about that basketball open scrimmage on Saturday morning from 9:30 to 11 at the Coors Event Center. For Neil Welk, CUBuffs.com, I'm Voice of the Buffs, Mark Johnson. Thanks for joining us this week on the Buffs Insider.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.